Welcome to the Masonic Authors Guild International, where each week two historians review and critique books and other productions focused on Freemasonry, as well as discussing broader issues in historical research. The Guild members are Robert Cooper, Curator Emeritus of the Grand Lodge of Scotland, who lives in Edinburgh, and Mark Tabbert, former curator at the George Washington Masonic National Memorial, Alexandria, Virginia, who lives in Iowa. Both Guild members have published significant academic historical research and have contributed to Masonic journals and magazines. Together, they have over 65 years as Freemasons and are members of numerous Masonic research societies and lodges in Europe and North America. The Masonic Authors Guild International's mission, as well as these podcasts, is to promote the highest professional and academic standards in Masonic research, education, and publications. These podcasts begin the Guild's mission by reviewing those that do or do not uphold high academic standards and explain why they do or do not. We Magi are proud to be supported by Amity, the only app where you can find a lodge anywhere in the world. Look for our podcasts in Amity's media section.
In today's episode, we review Stephen Knight's The Brotherhood, The Secret World of Freemasons, first published in 1984 by Stein and Day Press. It is not a history book, but a popular journalistic one. Containing a list of books, it also has three appendices: one, information for candidates; two, the officers of the lodge; and three, initiation to the first degree up to the end of the obligation. Its table of contents lists acknowledgments and a prologue with an epilogue. The Brotherhood's 28 chapters are divided into six parts: 1, workers, guilds to secret society; 2, the police; 3, inside information; 4, the law; 5, powers temporal and spiritual; and finally, 6, the KGB connection. The author, Stephen Knight, was born in 1951 and died in 1985. Although his book provides little biographical information, Wikipedia states he was born in Essex, England, and started work as a newspaper reporter at the age of 18. His first major success came in 1976 with his book, Jack the Ripper, The Final Solution, published by Bounty Books. Four different film adaptations were made, starting with Murder by Decree in 1979, and most recently, From Hell in 2001. Knight became a follower of the controversial cult led by Bhagwa Sri Rajneesh, and he took the name of Swami Pooja Dibal in 1983 following his conversion. The cult created a commune in Oregon in 1981, which caused enormous animosity in the state. Recently, these events were a subject of a Netflix documentary series, which aired in 2018, entitled Wild, Wild Country. Although Knight was a religious follower of that cult, he is not mentioned by them, nor in the Netflix documentary series. This despite his celebrity status. Amazingly, his tragically early death at the age of 34 in 1985 has been claimed by anti-Masons as an assassination by Freemasons who killed him by poisoning. The fact that the cause of his death was due to a brain tumor for which he had been receiving treatments for several years is ignored. This allegation has been made numerous times and in various places online.
In podcast 4, I describe the first steps I take when assessing a book, but this is only my personal method. I look for an index, bibliography, footnotes or endnotes, and some details of the author's qualifications. By this method, I usually obtain a rough idea of the quality of the publication before delving into the book itself. This is a 326-page book which has an index, but is mainly a list of people, some prominent, some not, which the author claims to have consulted when writing his book. Whether or not this is accurate is unknown, as Knight provides no details of when or where these alleged interviews took place. During my admittedly brief and slight research, I could not find any evidence of any such interviews having taken place, nor are there, as far as I can establish, any written or audio records of these interviews. Any self-respecting historian or even a journalist would have kept such information for future reference. The book contains occasional footnotes, but these do little to enhance the contents of the book. There are no illustrations. No qualifications of the author are provided, except to say that he is a freelance writer. More importantly, and from the publisher's perspective, he is proclaimed as being the author of the book Jack the Ripper, The Final Solution, published in 1976, which was a major success. Knight's book is about Freemasonry and nothing else, and it deals almost entirely with its alleged influence in British society and culture, although he does occasionally mention other countries. In chapter 4, for example, he gives his explanation of how Freemasonry spread from Britain to other parts of the world. He cites no academic or other authoritative sources. His so-called history is drawn exclusively from books previously written by a variety of anti-Masons and some Masonic authors. As mentioned in an earlier podcast, Freemasons who began writing about the craft did so for the benefit of their fellow Freemasons. These authors would never have imagined that their work would be later used to attack Freemasonry. Some would argue, and with some justification, that we made a rod for our own backs, and sadly, some Masonic writers continue to manufacture such rods. I mention this book in podcast 4 as an example of how to assess the quality of a historian's research, and it is worth repeating here. On page 1 of the book, Knight shows that he is no historian. He states, quote, "Under the Secret Societies Act 1799, Freemasons are permitted to hold meetings only if yearly returns providing names, addresses, etc., which are submitted to the clerks, that is, justices of the peace. This is rarely done, so most gatherings in Masonic lodges are held in breach of this law." Close quote. However, this law was repealed in 1967 under the Statute Law Revision Acts, which did away with many obsolete Acts of Parliament, including the Unlawful Societies Act. This book was published in 1984, almost 20 years after this law was abolished. For an academic historian, this would have been a factual error of career-ending proportions. However, Knight used this error of omission to smear Freemasons and Freemasonry, and this is all on the very first page. From a Masonic historian's perspective, he represents a link between other pop historians, such as Eric von Daniken, who wrote a variety of popular books speculating on whether humans were the product of alien visitors. His very speculative and now discredited books began with The Chariots of the Gods, published in 1969, and ends, for the purpose of this podcast, with The Gods and Their Grand Design, The Eighth Wonder of the World, published in the same year as Knight's book in 1984. Von Daniken is mentioned because he, Knight, and other popular writers show how such books become successful. They latch onto a subject, make it spectacular, weird, or conspiratorial, or all of these. Knight's book took the country by storm, and it was read by all sections of society. This narrative fed into later conspiracy theories, which had a direct impact on Freemasonry in Scotland. The conspiracy goes like this. In March 1996, Thomas Hamilton entered Dunblane Primary School and shot dead 16 children and one teacher and wounded 15 others. He then shot himself. As Knight had already proved that the police force was under the influence of Freemasons, it was obvious that Hamilton was only allowed to hold a firearms certificate with the connivance of his fellow Freemasons who, as police officers, vetted applicants for his certificate. The conspiracy theory ran its full course in the media, particularly the Scottish national newspapers, The Scotsman and The Herald. The conclusion was that Freemasonry was ultimately responsible for the death and injuries inflicted by Hamilton. This caused an enormous problem for the Grand Lodge of Scotland, which was totally unprepared to counter this preposterous claim. Even when Grand Lodge was able to prove that Hamilton was not a Freemason and that a lengthy and in-depth public inquiry found no evidence of Masonic influence on this tragic event, this did not stop the media from continuing to publish these discredited allegations. Why allow the facts, the truth, to spoil what was, for the media, a great story? Many people realised that Knight's book was nonsense, but quite a number believed the conspiracy theory to be true. The Dunblane massacre was born in the pages of Knight's book. Mud Sticks. The prologue of Knight's book and the first chapter entitled Origins provides a history of Freemasonry, but it is nothing more than yet another mishmash and repetition of previously published anti-Masonic material. He has nothing original to say or gives no new interpretations. Nor does he provide any meaningful evidence or sources in support of his numerous and fantastic claims about Freemasonry in Britain during the 1970s and 1980s.
Bob's placement of Knights, the Brotherhood, next to von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods is spot on and is connected to a far older and far nobler literary genre, investigative journalist. Without going further back than the late 1800s, in America, such writers as Ida Tarbell and Sinclair Lewis earned the epitaph as muckrakers. These journalists exposed the corruption, graft, greed, and deaths within the great industries and corporations in the Gilded Age, circa 1885 to circa 1915. Meatpacking, food and drug productions, inner-city poverty, diseases, predatory business tactics, and financial manipulations were all brought to the public's attention. This in turn caused the federal government to make its first great attempt to arbitrate between big business, trade unions, and consumers. By the 1970s, muckraking journalists were recognized as great champions of free press and a free society, reaching the pinnacle with the Washington Post's Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein's investigations of the Watergate break-in that led to President Nixon's resignation in 1974. Ever since Watergate, and the fame and fortune that came to Woodward and Bernstein, every publishing house wanted their own All the President's Men, and every self-styled journalist wanted to produce an equally sensational and successful manuscript. From the popularity of Chariots of the Gods, other books on fantastic topics, such as Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, UFOs, and the Bermuda Triangle, also became bestsellers. Stephen Knight had a stroke of genius, or perhaps malevolent guile, to rehash old Masonic conspiracy tropes, aiming to have the same journalistic impact of the Watergate scandal into an expanded expose of English Freemasonry. With more audacity than talent and more ego than intelligence, Knight's revelations into the secret works of Freemasons begins, as Bob mentioned, with the standard false story of Freemasonry starting in England and rapidly turning into a conspiratorial international cabal. By chapter 5, he states, quote, "The ancient and accepted rite of the 33rd degree is the only cohesive Masonic group run on international lines. This Supreme Council in London is one of the many Supreme Councils in the various parts of the globe, of which the senior is the Supreme Council of Charleston, USA, which effectively operates a worldwide network of Freemasons in the most powerful positions in the executive, legislature, judiciary, and armed forces, as well as the industry, commerce, and professions of many nations," unquote. Knight provides no evidence of this highly terrifying yet highly idiotic statement. Part 2 and Part 3 of the Brotherhood, containing chapters 6 through 16, are collections of narratives, anecdotes, hearsay, and various outrageous conjectures, all attempting to prove a healthy percentage of English Freemasons are wallowing in corruption, kickbacks, bribes, and the usual list of mis, mal, and non-feasance bad stuff. Part 4, 5, and 6 continue to tell more stories that reach deep within the British criminal justice system. The last few chapters extend the story to the infamous Italian lodge called P2 and its connections to the Vatican Bank, and then naturally onto America's CIA and the Soviet Union's KGB. Liberally sprinkled through all these stories are innumerable names of men who are identified as Freemasons, but without proof or citation. As mentioned in episode 6 on Jasper Ridley's The Freemasons, it is one thing to list the names of men who may or may not be Freemasons, but it is an entirely different thing to prove such men acted as agents of a Masonic overlord within a vast conspiracy. Rather than simply honorable or ruthless men who happen to be members of a variety of neighborhood lodges.
One of Magi's main aims is to assess the standard of books, papers, and articles, and other media, about Freemasonry. This book by Stephen Knight purports to be a history of Freemasonry's alleged influence over British society during the 1970s and the 1980s, and is therefore rather dated. What purpose does it serve to review a book that is 40 years old and which is hugely biased towards the author's point of view? Distasteful though the contents may be, especially to Freemasons, it is, whether we like it or not, part of our history. Most Freemasons outside Britain will not have read this book, but I have no doubt that they should read it. They will be shocked by the extreme nature of the allegations made by the author. To understand what non-Masons think about Freemasonry, this book is worthwhile reading, even although the contents will not sit well with most members of the craft. Who buys and reads books such as this? The first group would be those who enjoy fantastic tales by authors such as von Daniken, Cotterill, and Bajan Ali. A second group are conspiracy theorists, and lastly, Freemasons. It is the latter who probably buy most of these books simply because they are apparently about us. Here Magi has expressed another of its aims, and that is to help Freemasons to spot poor and downright bad material on Freemasonry, and more importantly, to assess the quality of what has been written about Freemasonry.
Although we Magi may occasionally venture back into this form of dreadful Masonic exposés, we plan to spend most of our labor enjoying and recommending the best works of Masonic history and discussing healthy and positive historical related topics. Such books like The Brotherhood remind me of a favorite movie line and two of my favorite and oldest takes on conspiracy theories. First, from the 1997 Austin Powers movie, Dr. Evil yells, "I'm the head of an evil empire. I don't share, you freaking idiot." This is a true statement. Evil people don't run conspiracies with millions of middle-class men. They just wish to kill people and take what they want. My first point, there is, and always has been, conspiracies to obtain and wield political power. Since the late 1700s in Europe and America, these conspiracies developed into such political parties as the Conservatives, the Labor, the Republicans, the Democrats, the Socialists, the Greens, and Libertarians, etc. These parties meet in private to secretly determine what candidates they wish to run for a variety of office, and they plan secret strategies and allocate resources to gain and hold power. What's more, almost anyone can contribute and join these parties, seek the memberships for support, and potentially be elected to the highest offices of the state. This ties to the second point. To survive and thrive, both good and bad enterprises must deliver what they promised, and in the most efficient manner possible. Any person interested in securing great political power and ill-gotten wealth would not join a stodgy old man's local Masonic lodge, where they would be subject to odd initiation rituals and lectures on esoteric symbolism and biblical references. A zealous Bolshevik, a mafia button man, a sociopathic terrorist, and the animals who run drugs and sex trafficking networks don't waste a moment of his or her time with Freemasonry's mumbo-jumbo and moralizing. They are too focused on themselves and their own twisted desires.
The Brotherhood, the Secret World of the Freemasons, is the epitome of bad historical writing. Although Knight is writing about the then recent past, it is still history, modern history. This book is therefore one example of extremely bad historical writing and utterly unworthy to even be considered for Magi seal of approval. The only use this book has is that it allows us to set it against a background of extremely good historical writing, such as that by Bullock and Stevenson, both discussed in previous podcasts, episode 11 and 7 respectively. By comparing these two extremes of writing about the past, it makes the contrast between the two stand out so clearly that what Freemasons read about themselves should now be a much more informed choice.
Goodbye from us, Magi. Good luck and Godspeed. This podcast is for educational purposes and perhaps entertainment. While the Masonic Authors Guilds International provides the most accurate information possible, the listeners use the information at their own risk. This podcast and its contents are Magi's property, as are all the opinions and information it presents. Robert L. D. Coopers and Mark A. Taberts and any other speakers' views and opinions within the podcast do not represent nor speak for Freemasonry, any Masonic organization, their former or current employers, in any way, shape, or form. Magi, Cooper, or Taberts will not compensate you in any way whatsoever if you ever happen to suffer any inconvenience due to the information herein contained.